While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the Radio News Analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Good afternoon, Namibia, and welcome to On the Radar right here on Eagle FM, your number one talk radio station. I'm your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and today is Tuesday, the 17th of March, 2026. Now, as we move further into the week, we appreciate you taking this time to join us for another edition of the program where we track, unpack, and make sense of the stories shaping our country and the world around us. This afternoon, we continue to follow key developments across Namibia, from economic shifts and governance matters to innovation, youth development, and emerging opportunities. Now, these are the issues that not only dominate headlines, but also directly affect how individuals, businesses, and communities navigate daily life. Now, over the next 90 minutes, we'll bring you a deeper look into the decisions, trends, and events influencing national progress and regional dynamics. Our focus remains on providing clarity, going beyond surface-level reporting to explore what those developments mean in practical terms, both now and in the near future. In a rapidly changing environment, staying informed is more important than ever. Through this platform, we aim to connect you with reliable information throughout analysis, thoughtful analysis, and conversations that matter. Now, wherever you are listening from this afternoon, whether in Roodwoods, Gobabis, Okahandja, Otapi, Karasberg, Opuwo, or right here in the capital city that is Windhoek, thank you for being part of the conversation. This right here is On the Radar News Analysis on Eagle FM, keeping you informed, engaged, and connected to the issues that shape our nation. Now, let's get right into today's analysis. A regional education outreach program led by the Ministry of Education, Innovation, Youth, Sports, Arts and Culture is gaining momentum in the Zambezi region, with officials emphasizing the importance of early career guidance for learners. Now, speaking during the engagement, Alex Sikume, regional director, expressed appreciation for the ministerial-led education and career affair initiative, describing it as a timely intervention aimed at empowering learners with critical information about their futures. The program was launched at Caprivi Senior Secondary School, where learners from more than four schools gathered to participate in sessions focused on education pathways, subject selection, and career opportunities. Now, according to Sikume, such initiatives are particularly vital in regions where access to structured career guidance and exposure to diverse professions remain limited. Let's take a listen to Alex Sikume.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Alex Sikume, the Director of Education in the Zambezi region. Today we are here at Caprivi Senior Secondary School, one of the secondary schools in the region, where we are bringing in learners from various secondary schools in the region to have a career exhibition in terms of providing information to the learners on the possible career opportunities that are available when they have completed their studies. We have a number of institutions here, ranging from the universities, NYS, NAMCOL, Namibia Qualification Authority, and also directorates from within the ministry to come share with the learners on what opportunities and career prospects are available in the country. In terms of also the universities, in terms of what study opportunities are available for them to undertake. It's a good initiative because for me it serves as an encouragement to the learners to see in terms of the potential that exists within the country, what is available for them to pursue further studies. And I think we really appreciate that the ministry has brought this to us. us. We are engaging with the grade 11s and AS learners. So we want also in our schools that we expand this to start with the lower grades, so that when they select their subjects, they know what do they want to become. I think that's very significant for us as a region. Thank you very much for the ministry that brought us this together, engaging with our learners and learners engaging with other organizations here information opportunities available.
Career fairs continue to play a vital role in guiding learners towards informed education and career choices, with education stakeholders emphasizing their relevance in today's rapidly evolving job market. Now in Namibia, where many learners rely on schools for career guidance, such platforms are seen as essential in bridging the gap between classroom and the world of work. Now, through direct interaction with professionals, with institutions and training providers, learners gain practical insight into various career paths, helping them better understand the qualifications and the skills required in different fields. Educators note that career fairs are particularly important in assisting learners with subject selection, a critical step that can influence future opportunities, and by exposing learners to a wide range of professions, including vocational and technical careers. These events promote diverse pathways and help reduce the misconception that university education is the only route to success. It is as we keep emphasizing on TVET education, that is vocational training education, there's a practical need for learners, those that are particularly in school now, to be educated on the importance of TVET education, and also giving them solutions, or giving them placing it on the table on which way they prefer when you tell them about university and the careers that are offered at the university, and also when you provide the courses that are done at TVET educations or TVET colleges that they can pursue. Sometimes a learner might have a passion for something, they're probably at the village and they have a passion for putting wood together, building something, not really knowing what it's even called, that it's carpentry work that they can further pursue and become a qualified carpenter who is able to start their own business tomorrow and recruit other people. So it's such things such as career affairs that are necessary to educate the learners on such. And I'm not so sure whether they do incorporate really emphasis on TVET education when they speak at this career fairs, but it will be necessary for educators to do their part in that regard. And also it shouldn't be limited to schools coming together, for instance, four schools coming together to a particular school for a career fair. Then that would mean not all the learners obviously would drive from or walk from other schools to come and attend those career fairs. I think it's necessary for educators to ensure that, to place it in the school calendar, that every school should host a career fair where perhaps learners can come to school dressed as professionals. The theme could be dress as you want to be. You see those ones coming to school dressed as doctors, even probably making stethoscopes out of papers and looking like doctors, and those dressed like engineers, and then you get others dressed like teachers, you get other ones dressed as plumbers, perhaps get things at home within a household itself, and carry that sponge to school and look like a plumber. We need to really get into practically teaching the learners in terms of career guidance or career fees, in making it practical for them to know that there are different careers out there that they can pursue, especially those in the rural areas, because most of them don't have access to television where they can hear somebody being interviewed on TV and they're being told that this is a pilot, for instance, Or perhaps this is an aircraft manager, somebody who fixes planes. When you grow up not knowing certain things exist, or certain terminologies, not knowing them, not knowing that certain fields do exist, then you are less likely to aspire to be that, because these are things that you don't even know that they do exist. So career fees are definitely not outdated. And I think it's at this juncture that I would really say we need to place emphasis on teaching the learners about career guidance and career affairs. This would also reduce the tendency of first-year students going to university, picking a course just for the sake of being in the university, not necessarily because it's what they pursue, what they want to do, what they have been dreaming or wanting to achieve, but because it is the next available thing and they don't know if there's other available opportunities. Hence, they get into that course. In the long run, they don't understand what it's going on, and they feel like, why did I even take this course in the first place? They end up failing their first year, and then they have to start all over the following year, change courses, because now they understand what I can pursue, I'm qualified to pursue. But then in the process of that, also they lose their NSFAF, because NSFAF then would not pay for them until they pass in to go to second year. You know, so it becomes a system that really needs to be broken down, and I think it needs to be addressed at grassroots level. And the grassroots level, in my thinking capacity right now, I'm thinking about addressing it at a learner scale, where teachers and educators really go out and educate the learners. And I think ministries could also come together in this aspect and go out there and play their part, be role models to the learners and speak about, okay, this is how I got into this particular career, this is what I studied, so that they are well equipped and well informed on what career guidance is out there. Now, for instance, there are some learners who are very good at speaking, and sometimes you get teachers and principals selecting them to always be the master of ceremonies at certain events at the school, but then they're not being guided that there are, you can pursue a course in media studies, for instance. You can pursue a course in journalism and technology, for instance, and the points that are going to be required of you at this particular field. Because if you get a learner who really wants to pursue perhaps a particular course in social sciences, and just because this learner is very smart in the science field, then they are forced to do the science field, wherein the course that they actually want to do is in the social field, and they could just enhance themselves on those particular skills while it's still early. So career guidance is of utmost importance. I remember back then, when I was in high school and we were selected, it was only the three of us in a particular class of perhaps more than 40 learners to go and attend a career fair at the university, at the Namibia University of Science and Technology. Now, the question comes in to say, what about the majority of the other learners that are left behind? What about them? Which opportunity are they going to have to actually learn something in terms of career fair and career guidance? So career fair is definitely not outdated. So career fair also play a key role in identifying or addressing inequalities in access to information, especially for learners in rural and underserved communities. Now, by bringing opportunities closer to the schools, they ensure that more learners are equipped with the knowledge that is needed to make informed decisions about their futures. Now, to maximize the benefits of career fairs, educators are encouraged to adopt practical and inclusive approaches. Now, this includes organizing school-based mini career affairs, and that is by collaborating with the Ministry of Education, Innovation, Youth, Sports, Arts and Culture, and other stakeholders as well. And I believe also the Ministry of Health, the Ministry of Gender Equality could also play its part in that regard. Sometimes it requires the educators, the teachers themselves, to reach out. And sometimes it requires also the teachers, the educators themselves, to reach out to companies. I mean, for instance, here in the capital city, we have the fire brigade right there at the city of Windhoek, whereby they have an open policy for educators or learners to come and attend, and the paramedics on site will be able to show them around, show them the ambulance, show them the fire truck, show them all that is necessary. That is part of practically teaching children about careers or possibility of careers that are out there. You never know, it is at that particular visit that you will get one learner who will even become the manager, who will even come up with solutions and better ways that we can maybe manage fire and all that kind of stuff. So when we're talking about contribution to our economy and propelling the Namibian nation into the right direction, we really need to play our part in educating the learners early on and providing them with the necessary information. Now, of course, providing transport or to ensure that all learners can also attend such events. We need to go beyond speaking about it and rather really educating them. And I think here on radio, we do really do much, especially right here on Eagle FM. We do really much in terms of educating, even learners can benefit from that, even parents themselves, information that they can pass on to the learners. Now, additionally, integrated career guidance into the school curriculum and encouraging learners to share knowledge gained from these events can also help extend the impact beyond those who attend. And I remember when we attended that career affair, we were not asked to inform the class of what we actually learned. It's the same when ministerials or perhaps companies go for engagements and they go and attend these workshops and come back and sit in their desk as if nothing actually happened. Then we don't disseminate the information that we were taught at those particular workshops or events that we went to that could have be of benefit to fellow colleagues or fellow learners. Now, the use of digital platforms to complement physical career affairs is also seen as a way of broadening access. Stakeholders do talk about exposure to career guidance, enabling learners to make better academic decisions and for them to develop clear goals and to build confidence about their future. As such, career affairs remain a critical tool in preparing young people for meaningful participation in the economy. So efforts to expand and strengthen these initiatives are expected in order to contribute significantly to youth development and long-term national growth, long-term social and economic growth. So it's very necessary for us to still play our part in terms of career affairs and career guidance for learners to be well equipped. And like I said, so that it can also reduce school dropout or university dropout because learners are not really equipped with what is out there. Now, of course, this is On The Radar News Analysis. Should you be interested in partaking in the news, perhaps your contributions, 083-288-401 is the number in studio. That is 083-288-401. For now, let's pause right here. Take a trip to the marketplace. Of course, we have more coming your way. Stay tuned.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM.
Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo teto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete opoye ekukulile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka okone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa Ninge kwa tafanona, Monica ko Eagle FM, onore tatu imwe bali heali, nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa, nora hetatu natu, bali o hetatu batatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Simon, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Welcome back. In other news, the Communications Regulatory Authority of Namibia has released its quarterly statistics bulletin for the period of October to December 2025, outlining key developments and emerging trends across Namibia's telecommunications, cybersecurity, broadcasting, and postal sectors. Now, the report provides a comprehensive overview of market performance, covering indicators such as SIM card usage, internet subscriptions, mobile traffic volumes, ICT revenue and investment, as well as cyber threats and postal service utilization. Now, according to CREN's Executive for Communication and Consumer Relations, Mufaro Nesongano, the total number of active SIM cards increased by 4% during the quarter, rising from 2,674 million in the third quarter to 2,788 million in the fourth quarter of 2025. Now, they say the growth was driven by a 5% increase in prepaid subscriptions, with postpaid subscriptions recording a marginal 1% increase, therefore reflecting continued consumer preference for prepaid mobile services. Now, mobile brand subscriptions also recorded a 4% increase, largely driven by handset-based internet usage. Now, meanwhile, Doggle and router-based broadband subscriptions grew by 10%, albeit from a relatively small base, indicating rising demand for fixed wireless connectivity alternatives. Now, the report further notes that the proportion of SIM cards used for internet access remained stable at 62%, suggesting that internet adaptation is growing in line with mobile subscription increases. However, machine-to-machine, or known as M2M subscriptions, declined by 2%, pointing to consolidation within enterprise Internet of Things deployments. Now, fixed line subscriptions continued their gradual decline, decreasing by 1% across both residential and business segments. In terms of usage patterns, mobile voice traffic remained largely unchanged during the quarter, signaling a plateau in traditional voice services as consumers increasingly shift toward data-driven communication platforms. Now, on a positive note, a fixed broadband connectivity expanded significantly, with internet subscriptions increasing by 8%. Now, this growth is attributed to the continued rollout and uptake of fiber and fixed wireless technologies across the country. In the cybersecurity space, reported cyber threat incidents dropped by approximately 53%, and that's a significant amount. Yeah, of course, it could go lower, but 53% is really high, and perhaps it could indicate that more people are becoming aware of cyber threats, and more companies, of course, are now aware of cyber threats, and they are doing what is necessary or what they are able to do to the extent that they can in order to prevent cyber threats or cyber incidents, cyber crime incidents that, of course, will cost them lots of money, especially when a company is invaded. Now, however, CREN cautions that underlying vulnerabilities remain unchanged, suggesting that the decline may be linked to reduced threat visibility rather than an actual decrease in cyber risks. Now, within the broadcasting sector, pay TV subscriptions declined by 6%, reflecting changing consumer preferences and growing competition from streaming platforms. Now, despite this, advertising revenue in the sector remains stable. The postal sector showed minimal change during the reporting period, with postbox occupancy holding at 48%. And private bag utilization steady at 35%. Now, Crane says the report reflects a communications landscape that is increasingly shaped by digital transformation, shifting consumer behavior, and the growing importance of data-driven services in Namibia. Let's now take a listen to Crane's executive for communication and consumer relations as he speaks on this. That is Mufaro Nesongano.
The Communications Regulatory Authority of Namibia, CREN, has released its quarter 4 2025 statistics bulletin, highlighting growth and evolving trends across key sectors. Active SIM cards increased by 4% to 2.788 million, driven by prepaid subscriptions, while mobile broadband subscriptions also rose by 4%. Fixed internet subscriptions recorded an 8% increase, reflecting continued expansion of fiber and wireless connectivity. In cybersecurity, reported incidents declined by 53%, although underlying risks remain. Pay TV subscriptions dropped by 6% due to shifting viewing habits, while the postal sector remained stable. The full report can be found on our website, that's www.cren.na.
Now, of course, let's pause here now, take a trip to the marketplace, and we'll be back shortly. This right here is On The Radar News Analysis. Don't go anywhere.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipura nenge no wapungwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete okoye ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwala. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge kwata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile konderewa, nora hetatu natu, bali o hetatu watatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Substance farmers in Kavango East region and Kavango West region have begun harvesting early crops, providing much needed relief to rural households as they await the maturity of the staple greens. Now, farmers across several villages report that crops such as beans, pumpkins, and bambara nuts have reached harvesting stage, helping to sustain families following months of uncertainty during the current farming season. Petrus Shamwapi, a farmer from the Mashare area in Kavango East, said his household has already started harvesting beans and pumpkins. He noted that while rainfall has been inconsistent, the early yield is helping bridge the gap between the main harvest. Now, the rains were not consistent this season, but we are grateful that some crops have already started producing, he said. Now, in the Mukwe area, farmer Maria Dimende confirmed that Bambara nuts have also begun yielding. She described the crop as one of the most reliable in the region due to its ability to withstand limited rainfall. We depend on this crop for food at home. Now that we have started harvesting beans and Bambara, it is a relief for the family, she said. Agricultural observers note that early maturing crops play a critical role in supporting households during the period before staple grains are ready for harvest. Now, despite irregular rainfall patterns this season, farmers say the moisture received so far has been sufficient for crop growth, and as a result, many yields are now producing early yields, particularly beans and pumpkins. Now, Bambara nuts, a traditional drought-resistant crop widely cultivated in the region, have also shown promising results, raising cautious optimism among farmers. Attention is now turning to staple crops such as maize and mahangu, or pearl millet, which remain central to food security in the Kavango regions. Now, Johannes Morangi, a farmer from the Ndiona constituency, said current field conditions for maize and mahangu appear encouraging. However, he stressed that the outcome will depend on continued rainfall in the coming weeks. Maize and mahangu are essential for not only for daily consumption, but also for storage, enabling households to sustain themselves throughout the year. And Janice Morangi said if the rains continue, many farmers could see a very good harvest by April. Now, community members remain cautiously optimistic about the season, noting that the moderate rainfall in the coming weeks could significantly improve harvesting prospects. However, farmers warn that unpredictable weather patterns continue to pose a risk, particularly in regions that rely heavily on rain-fed agriculture. Now, agriculture remains the primary source of livelihood for many communities in Kavango East region and Kavango West region, where subsistence farming is central to both food security and income, and most households depend on crops such as mahangu, maize, beans, pumpkins, and bambara nuts, which are well adapted to the sandy soils and the climate of the area. While challenges such as drought and erratic rainfall persist, a successful harvest season would ease pressure on households and reduce reliance on purchased food. But nonetheless, we caught up with my colleague Anakleta Haikera to speak more on subsistence farmers yielding good results in Kavango and Kavango West region. A very good afternoon to you, Anakleta Haikera, and welcome to On The Radar News Analysis.
Good afternoon, happy and good day to all the listeners of Eagle FM.
Yeah, Anakleta, you certainly have good news for us. I take it regarding the subsistence farmers in both the Kavango West and Kavango East region.
Now, this is one of the good season and reason why most of the subsistence farmer in the Kavango East and West and everywhere in Namibia starts showing off by looking at some of the harvests of the early crops that they have already started eating or already started producing. And back here at home in the Kavango region, subsistence farmers have already begun harvesting early crops such as beans, bambara nuts, and pumpkins, while they are still waiting for the mahangu crops and also some of the maize crops to be ready before they harvest it by the end of April or maybe in the beginning of April. Mm. And, most of the farmers are very happy of this year because the rain has been really, really promising. And also at the same time, despite having climate change, you can see the difference from the previous year when people were receiving drought relief programs, because this was due to no crops were really being harvested because now the weather was changing here and there. Remember that last year we only had rain in November, December and January, but this year the rain is still continuously going. As I speak, yesterday it was still raining in Rundu. Now you can imagine how the farmers are feeling.
Now indeed. Now talk to us about not just mahangu that they are harvesting, but also other staple food that they planted earlier on. Talk to us about that, because I know for sure that some substance farmers mostly focus on mahangu as a staple food, even though they do also harvest some beans and all that kind of stuff, not in big quantities.
Now, let me just tell you about the farmers here in Kavango region. Some of them don't really just do the crops farming. There are many that do vegetables. Mm-hmm. And also at the same time, some farmers, instead of having to have mahangu, they go for groundnuts. Because, you know, there are markets where people normally sell groundnuts, and also at the same time, you find some foreigners that comes and buy the type of crops that we also produce here, mm-hmm. but not really on a huge amount, but just on a small amount, so that they can also do the same in their country, plant it also to say. And then last year, one of the green schemes, which is Shitemo Green Scheme, the owner promised that he would really want to change from producing maize to just producing groundnuts. Mm-hmm. So it has become a thing of the past where people will just rely on one stable crop. Now, as we speak right now, the harvest was good with the groundnuts. So mainly this year, looking at the rain, many farmers have already started selling their Bambara nuts. And imagine when you are selling Bambara nuts, mm-hmm. not only people from Kavango region will be interested to buy them, but also foreigners will come to buy. Like I remember in 2022, most of the farmers in the region produced more of these Bambara nuts, where it was even being sold in Zambia and Zimbabwe. And I hope perfectly, as we speak right now, if you go to town, you find that a lot of markets have already started selling them dry or still wet. And you can see that this year, the harvest is too much with the Bambara nuts. And a lot of farmers are happy because they are going to make money. Imagine for a bag of 50 kg, they are selling it for 750. Mm. And who will not make money? Yeah. So if you have two already, you know you are already stable, because the money that you are going to get, you can be able to save for your kids' school
education,
fees. Yeah, for your kids' education, or perhaps just feed the people that are in the house. And this will come from the hard work that you did earlier, starting from November, so to say. Because now, if you are already harvesting something from your field, it means you started earlier.
Now, what are the advantages of early maturing crops for substance farmers and their families?
The advantages are mostly they harvest earlier, and they can start already eating from their harvest, because now they don't need to wait longer and or maybe perhaps to start buying from the shops or from other people. But you as a farmer, you can already eat from your harvest. And also at the same time, if you are at an early harvest, people will start buying from you, of course, because they still don't have it. So now you are going to be one of the business people around that area, because you are now trading into what you have, what others need.
Quite interesting. Now, of course, the drought relief food has stopped at this point in time. How do you think this, from your analysis, just how do you think this perhaps affected the farmers? Has it maybe taught them to be more resilient? Has it taught them to be more independent? Or just what do you think about that?
Okay, what I've learned this year is most of the farmers have now gone away from sleeping too much or being in the bed when the sun rises. Because now we know a drought relief program have ended already in August last year. So then if you continue sleeping or not look for seeds to plow, then that means you are really going to starve at the end of the day. So many of those farmers that I've seen that were a bit relaxed has now started harvesting. And the most interesting thing that I have observed this year is to every household that you can go to, including my own household, there's something at the back.
Nice.
There is something at the back, either maize, groundnuts, or you have ambara or beans.
Or spinach.
Or spinach or pumpkins and watermelon as well. The reason why we did this is we want to get away from buying from people and then you have to produce it yourself. It's not always that we need to support others, but we can also support ourselves. And with the hands that God has already given us, we can also produce on our own as long as they seeds. So when you get seeds, don't just eat and throw away the seeds. Please eat and think about what that seed can produce for you.
And it's a way of contributing to food security. And on top of that also, on top of that, you are. Let's pause here quickly and make room for a scheduled commercial break. But don't go anyway. We'll be back shortly.
Phew, what a day. Finally on my way home. And hey, the taxi's empty. So much room. Oh no. Why is this big guy getting in and sitting on top of me? No, not the mimo with the big bag too. Now I'm squeezed.
Sometimes in life, you just get squeezed. But luckily, with Express Credit's term loans, you can get up to 32,000 Namibian dollars to help ease your financial squeeze in under 15 minutes.
Ah, now that's a relief.
Visit expresscredit.com.na. Express Credit, money when you need it.
A very good afternoon to you, Anakleta Haikira. How do you think this, from your analysis, just how do you think this perhaps affected the farmers? Has it maybe taught them to be more resilient? Has it taught them to be more independent? Or just what do you think about that?
Okay, what I've learned this year is most of the farmers have now gone away from sleeping too much or being in the bed when the sun rises. Because now we know a drought relief program have ended already in August last year. So then if you continue sleeping or not look for seeds to plow, then that means you are really going to starve at the end of the day. So many of those farmers that I've seen that were a bit relaxed has now started harvesting. And the most interesting thing that I have observed this year is to every household that you can go to, including my own household, there's something at the back.
Nice.
There is something at the back, either maize, groundnuts, or you have ambara or beans.
Or spinach.
Or spinach or pumpkins and watermelon as well. The reason why we did this is we want to get away from buying from people and then you have to produce it yourself. It's not always that we need to support others, but we can also support ourselves. And with the hands that God has already given us, we can also produce on our own as long as they seeds. So when you get seeds, don't just eat and throw away the seeds. Please eat and think about what that seed can produce for you.
And it's a way of contributing to food security. And on top of that also, on top of that you are also training the children, because then they have the responsibility of gardening the plants and in the backyard gardens and all that kind of stuff. So if they happen to be at school doing agriculture, it just also enhances their practical skills.
And also I spoke to some of the farmers in the field, like for instance I spoke to Petro Shampapi from Mashare, who says his family is already benefiting from the early harvest of beans and pumpkins. And also I literally spoke to one of the lady who's also a hard-working subsistence farmer, who's Maria Thimende from Mukwe, who says she has started selling her Bambara nuts during this season. She says she has already started making money for it. Mm. And she also say that, you know, early people who do things early always benefit, and the yield is always big.
That's true. Now, rainfall obviously had its part, you know, its biggest contribution in this, in early harvesting of those crops. But we do know that previous years it wasn't like that. It was quite dry and hard. But then what lesson perhaps should farmers take away from this? Or perhaps agriculture experts maybe take away from this? Because at the end of the day, we want to also harvest the water and be able to use it again when rainfall is not so good.
Yeah. One of the things I observed is, like now, a lot of things are happening and scientists are doing their best also. We never really understood about climate change, but even in the Bible, they talked about 7 years of harvest and 7 years of hunger. Yeah. So this is one of the things we should put in mind, that it's not like every year it's going to be the same. So perhaps maybe we should learn to have storages at home where you don't just eat everything, but store a little where you can use as seeds, where you can use when you have nothing. Storage also very, very important. You find that we have already traditional storages that called Osiheta, and also at the same time you find that most of the subsistence farmers have this storage in their household. So we should always, as farmers, you should always make sure that you don't eat everything, but at least just store a few so that you can still try and plant it the next year again. And also one thing that I know is, you know, you find that the climate change has now changed dramatically. So farmers must maybe now start doing research to see if this is how the climate is, what type of seed should I plant for it to come out so that I can harvest. Not, you know, if the climate is not good enough for the crops that you want to plant, but then you just continue planting because you know this is the normally crops that we do plant. But then we need to have changes because the climate is changing. So as farmers, we need to be smart enough to know.
And adopt. And maybe plant more drought-resistant crops or something like that.
Exactly.
Interesting. Yeah. Anakleta, what's your message out there for farmers, subsistence farmers, young farmers, people, especially the young people who want to really venture into agriculture? And yeah, maybe they are skeptical. We've been preaching about agriculture, but what's your message to them out there?
My message out there is agriculture remains the backbone of our livelihoods, and farmers consciously must be optimistic. Let's get away with saying mahangu is the only crops that grows during rain, but there are other specific crops that can also grow that you as a farmer can let's learn new things. Let's not only put ourselves into small boxes where we say we don't think out of it, and let's invent into many things so that foreigners can also see and start inventing in us, so that we cannot be a country where we will always be buying everything, but other countries should also be buying from us. So the most important thing is leave other things that we do not know, but let's concentrate on agriculture basically, because we have the fertile soil, the sand is good, So let's do agriculture. All right. Yeah, that's where I end.
Okay. Anagleka, thank you so much for making time for us right here.
No problem.
Okay. And with that, we pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. When we return, we'll be back with economic indicators. Thereafter, you can expect news beyond the borders of Namibia. See you after.
Lipura nengeno wapungwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko dite opoye ekukulile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge kwa tafanona monika ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa, nora hetatu natu, bali o hetatu matatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
It's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
And now for some economic indicators. 1 US dollar today is equal to 16 Namibian dollars, 0.80 cents. 1 Australian dollar is equal to 11 Namibian dollars, 0.90 cents. And 1 United Arab Emirates dirham is equal to 4 Namibian dollars and 58 cents. 1 euro is equal to 19 Namibian dollars and 31 cents. 1 pound sterling is equal to 22 Namibian dollars and 40 cents. 1 Chinese yuan is equal to 2 Namibian dollars and 42 cents. 1 Botswana pula is equal to 1 Namibian dollar and 23 cents. Now let's cross over to news beyond the borders of Namibia. Let's start off in South Africa, where they're talking about a Spaza Shop and Informal Traders Summit and an expo for 2026, which is aimed at empowering township entrepreneurs.
Another, the City of Joburg's Economic Development Department, in partnership with Business Culture, will today officially launch the Spaza Shop and Informal Traders Summit and Expo 2026. The gathering, we're told, is aimed at empowering township entrepreneurs and strengthening the informal economy. Let's get you a sense of what else we know about this with SABC News reporter Lopang Alamu, live to us now from Johannesburg. And Lopang, this is an important gathering given, of course, the challenges specifically in the Spaza Shop sector in the past 12 months.
In fact, Ayanda, a very good morning. However, you'd recall that Johannesburg High Court ruling late last year, which involved the matter between those informal traders in the inner city part of Johannesburg, as well as the city of Johannesburg's mayor, Dada Morero. Now, this related to the fact that these informal traders were allegedly not trading in those allocated spots by the city. And this then caused a great confusion for these traders, as well as, if you would remember, that for the past 2 years, the spaza shop economy has been under the spotlight. You'd recall those issues regarding the poisoning and those registration processes that took place just after that. In fact, those informal traders had gone through a process of registering their businesses, their small businesses, and this only applied to those who are eligible. And I think at this stage, let's talk to the people who are really at the heart of the summit, those traders. I've got someone who owns a spaza shop, and let's talk to her about what her expectations are. Thank you so much for your time. We spoke off camera, and you mentioned that you own a spaza shop in Rabirich. Please talk to us about what your expectations are from the summit today, and what do you think the city could do more for people such as yourself who own small businesses in the townships?
Well, my expectation today is it's actually my first time. I saw it on the in the newspaper, so it's actually my first time coming here. I've just started my business, and my expectation is for the government's this summer to assist me to boost in my shop, because my goals is and my vision is that I want to create jobs, since in the jobs there's less jobs for especially our youngsters. So I have started employing, I've employed a youngster. So I'd like the government to boost my my business so that I can grow and continue to do other shops in different other areas to create jobs for the youngsters of South Africa.
What are some of the challenges that you face as a spaza shop owner? And perhaps talk to us about that registration process. Did you, in fact, register after those new licensing agreements came into place?
No, I haven't registered. Yes, as I said, it's my first time. I haven't registered, and I would like the government to help me also to register my business. I've just started early. It's just, I'm now just a month started. So, yeah, so I'm also hoping that the government will help me with my registration and everything.
Well. Let's pause here, make room for a scheduled commercial break.
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before. Like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low because I donated blood.
Call NHB on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
Thank you so much for your time. I think we'll ask our colleague Bulelani Scott to show you what is currently happening here. There's a registration process just before the program starts. We understand that it was meant to have started about 30 minutes ago. However, that is yet to take place. And in fact, we're still waiting for the executive mayor to come to the center. Now, we're currently in Norwood, and quite a lot of questions for him regarding this particular summit. In fact, one of the key questions that a number of people have been raising since we spoke to them off camera, and it's quite a sensitive issue, and that has to do a lot with the issue of immigration within the business, small business sectors, particularly in your townships, particularly where those informal traders are concerned, as well as those spaza shops. And I think that's a conversation that really needs to be had in depth, because some of the complaints are that we see a number of South Africans being pushed out of this sector. But of course, we would need experts to delve more into that part of things. And another key challenge being the areas where the city then places these informal traders. For example, last year around November, that tense situation regarding the informal traders on De Villiers Street that eventually took the city to court had a lot to do with the fact that informal traders said that the city is not cognizant of the fact that they make more money where it's normally busy. Now, this is where you then find informal traders setting up in random places within the city, and instead of going to those designated spots. However, the city then saying that there are bylaws that need to be adhered by, and if it is not the case, then this really causes great confusion. Unfortunately, for anyone looking to start a small business, you cannot just set up anywhere. There are processes to be followed. You'd have to then go to the city and make your intentions clear, and also just really list the business. And if you are eligible, now that process involves you identifying yourself as a South African. If you are not a South African citizen by birth, you then need to be a South African citizen, a naturalized citizen.
We are still with news beyond the borders of Namibia and South Africa. Trade unions reject a prospect of SAPO liquidation. Let's take a listen.
It is blaming the post office's business rescue practitioners for retrenching workers and closing hundreds of branches. COSATU says it never agreed to liquidation and insists those responsible for the crisis must be held accountable.
COSATU rejects in the strongest possible terms ludicrous proposals to liquidate the South African Post Office, SAPO, by its supposed business rescue practitioners, the BRPs. It is beyond shameful that the very same BRPs who are appointed through a court agreement with the creditors in the Department of Communications and Digital Technologies in 2023 have nothing to show for the tenure beyond retrenching thousands of SAPO employees and plunging their families into absolute poverty and despair, closing hundreds of branches and thus further shrinking its customer base and potential to recover. Workers have reported the BRP's abysmal failure to pay millions of rands owed to workers, including medical and pension funds plus taxes. It is clear that besides further crippling SAPO and pickpocketing its employees, the only thing the BRPs have to show for the past several years are the hefty fees they have helped themselves to from SAPO.
The South African Federation of Trade Unions warns that liquidation would wipe out thousands of remaining jobs at the post office. SAFTU says many employees are older black women supporting extended families. It says this means that thousands of households could be pushed deeper into poverty.
The South African Federation of Trade Unions, SAFTU, notes with grave concern the growing calls from sections of government and business to liquidate the South African Post Office. If such a decision is taken, it will represent one of the most devastating blows to workers and the poor communities since the democratic transition, and it will confirm what SAFTU has warned repeatedly for so many decades, that the destruction of the post office has been deliberate consequences of government failures, corruption, and the refusal of authorities.
The Federation of Unions of South Africa says South Africans deserve answers after more than a decade of crisis and repeated bailouts at the post office. The Federation questions what progress has been made by business rescue practitioners while the entity continued to deteriorate.
Producer notes with anger and deep concern the possibility of the liquidation of the South African Post Office. For more than 10 years, the Post Office has been in crisis. Despite repeated bailouts and the use of taxpayers' money to keep the entity afloat, the situation has now only worsened. South Africans have every right to ask what has been done to turn this entity around over the past decade. What exactly have the business rescue practitioners been doing while the post office continued to collapse year after year? The continued deterioration of the post office is a slap in the face of South Africans.
Last week, SAPO's business rescue practitioners told Parliament that the risk of liquidating the post office is not gone, adding that they were promised 3.8 billion rands 18 months ago, but that is not forthcoming. Mkokeli Bandla, SABC News, Parliament.
Meanwhile, Sudan's education system is allegedly near collapsing.
Well, the continuing conflict in Sudan is raising serious concerns about the future of its youngest population. With schools closed across large parts of the country, the education of millions of children is at risk, raising fears of a lost generation. However, as Naba Mohideen reports from Port Sudan, many students find this scenario unacceptable and are taking responsibility for their own destiny.
15-year-old Nadia should be preparing for her secondary school exams. Instead, she's studying here at this displacement camp, far from the classroom she once knew. Nearly 3 full years into Sudan's war, her plight highlights the crisis that is unfolding quietly in Sudan, the collapse of an entire education system. Millions of children like Nadia are out of school as buildings shut down, teachers flee, and funding dries up. For Nadia, however, she's not willing to just give up.
We lost everything. My father is away. Our home is unreachable. But I need to continue studying so I can help myself and family. I want to be a pilot so to visit my home again and other places I haven't seen.
Displaced from their home, Nadia and her mother now depend on improvised learning spaces and volunteer tutors. But they are not alone in their determination to persevere. Across Sudan, families are forming neighborhood study circles and relying on informal lessons to keep children learning. Even in war, they believe education must come first.
I prioritize my daughter's and my other 4 children's education. I decided to return to studying myself, even at this age, so I can stay positive and set a good example for them. I also make and sell small handmade items to help support my family. No matter how hard life becomes, education must continue. We cannot allow this war to cost us a whole generation.
With formal schools closed in many areas, volunteer educators and members of Sudan's diaspora are also stepping in. Some teach small groups in their communities. Others offer remote lessons when connectivity allows.
While the global attention remains focused on hunger and fighting, the long-term cost of lost schooling may shape the country's future far beyond the battlefield.
Education is widely recognized as a critical economic enabler, acting as a foundation for human capital development, innovation, and sustainable growth. Experts warn that prolonged disruption could severely impact this, and instead leave a vacuum that can only be filled by negative and often dangerous influences.
If this conflict keeps children out of school, we risk losing an entire generation. When education stops, the danger grow. Child labour, early marriage, recruitment and lasting trauma. Learning during war is not optional. It protects children and gives them stability. These young people will rebuild this country, and without education, recovery will be much harder.
For Nadia and her mother, continuing to study is more than preparation for exams. It's an act of resilience and hope, a refusal to let war define what comes next. Naba Mohideen, CGTN, Port Sudan.
China-France cooperation drives new energy sector in northern France.
In Hauts-de-France, a copper processing company with over 260 years of history was once on the brink of bankruptcy. With investment from a Chinese company in 2016, the plan has since revitalized.
Now, we are achieving our production target of 7,000 tons per year, which is remarkable compared to the beginning in 2016. At that time, there were only 12 people at a small unit. We have 70 employees now with projects and investments provided by the group.
Leveraging its proximity to Paris, London and major automakers, including Renault and Stellantis, the region of Hauts-de-France has attracted nearly 50 Chinese companies across automotive, energy, and chemical sectors.
We go on a regular basis in China to meet with China groups and once again to explain where we are, what we do, and how we can help them to choose our region and make sure that we are the hub for them in Europe and the best gateway for Chinese investment here.
What is being valued most is Chinese companies' expertise in electric vehicle batteries as the region pursues its green transformation. Stretching from Dunkirk to Douai emerges a new industrial cluster, which is called Battery Valley, where Asian experts are proving key in launching operations. For instance, a Chinese-invested battery plant near Renault's facility is now operating steadily.
We have already delivered 10,000 cars to Renault. And step by step, we will ramp it up. And at the end of the year, it will be approximately 75,000 cars delivered from our plants.
Today in France, the best-selling electric car is the Renault 5. It runs on Chinese batteries produced where? In Hauts-de-France. Whether regarding electric vehicle batteries, investments, or the development of port activities, it is clear that this mode of modern industry makes sense to regions like mine.
This momentum is spreading. In Douai, a new collaboration on battery casings is already up and running. At the port of Dunkirk, plans for a battery materials project are moving full steam ahead. Once complete, it will have the capacity to support the production of around 500,000 electric vehicles. Another focus of cooperation is on the recycling of batteries.
In the field of battery materials and recycling, France currently lacks some pieces. Our project will complete the picture, offering the market a full upstream solution.
As more Chinese new energy companies arrive, the Battery Valley will continue to expand, powering industrial transformation for France and even the entire Europe.
Meanwhile, rising mosquito numbers worry Nairobi residents.
There's something lacking in the air, or so many Kenyans believe.
For months, Kenyans on social media have discussed what they call the mosquito invasion, a marked increase in mosquitoes.
This year, mosquitoes have been so many you can't sleep without seeing them everywhere. Even now when evening comes, if I fail to turn on the lights, the mosquitoes will bite.
And it would appear that these concerns are not completely unfounded. Mosquito research is an area that scientists at the Kenya Medical Research Institute are well-versed in. Dr. Damaris Matoke-Muhia confirms that the rainy season, coupled with certain urban habits, are the main causes.
We could affiliate the increase in numbers of mosquitoes to courtesy of climate change. But the other part is that many people in Nairobi do what we call as water harvesting. So you find that many people keep storing water in containers. They create what we call as microhabitats where the mosquitoes can breed easily.
And she has mixed news about all this for Nairobi's millions of residents. The mosquito species found in Kenya's capital does not spread malaria. That particular disease is circulated by the Anopheles mosquitoes. However, recently outside the capital, a new species, the Anopheles defensi, has emerged. It breeds in water storage containers and has proved quite resilient, posing a significant threat to the usual malaria control and elimination efforts.
Been reported that this vector is resistant to the insecticides that are being used, such as pyrethroids. For malaria control, we currently use what we know as insecticide-treated nets, that's the ITNs. We also spray houses. However, there are other control measures that can be considered, such as larval source management, because then that targets the vector where at source, and therefore we reduce numbers of the mosquitoes that can become adults.
It is an area of concern as Africa aims to eliminate malaria by 2030. The World Health Organization says there were about 610,000 global deaths related to the disease in 2024. 95% of these occurred in Africa. In Kenya, scientists have not yet established whether the Anopheles defensi could be contributing to local malaria transmission rates, but they are keeping a close eye as the mosquitoes spread across Kenya's northern regions. Experts believe it's a problem that just won't go away.
Areas where there was no malaria previously is reporting cases of malaria. So the ecology or the way malaria is behaving, the way we knew it previously is changing. Therefore, we can't sit pretty.
Already the World Health Organization has approved the use of special mosquito repellents. But researchers say more resources are required for further research to gather more information and identify new tools as science battles to stay a step ahead in the fight against malaria. Wilkis Anyabwasi, GTN.
Last but not least, understand on what meningitis is and how meningitis is spread and what are the symptoms of meningitis.
Spotting the signs of meningitis early could save your life. So what is the infection and how do you know if someone's got it? So meningitis is an inflammation of the fluids around the brain, the lining of the brain, and it's also can lead to blood poisoning, which is known as sepsis. So meningitis is spread by little droplets being coughed or sneezed into the air, and you can breathe those in. But you can also get it from, for example, sharing a drink or kissing or even sharing a vape. Now, the problem is that around 10% of people have the virus or the bacteria lurking in the back of their throats or the back of their noses, and they don't know it because they're absolutely fine. So the symptoms are things like a high fever. You can be sick. You can have a headache. Sometimes, but not always, you can get a rash that doesn't disappear when you roll, for example, a roll of glass over it. You can get stiff neck, cold hands and feet. You can dislike bright lights, be really sensitive to them. And you can get drowsiness or be unresponsive. And you can even get seizures. Now, the problem is that many of those symptoms can be mistaken at the beginning for a cold or a flu or even a hangover. So there's viral meningitis and there's bacterial meningitis. Now, viral meningitis, people can often get well on their own without any major treatment. Bacterial meningitis, though, is much more serious, and that's the one that can affect the fluids and the lining of the brain and the spine and lead to these very serious complications. One of the problems for young people is that they are more susceptible. Late teens, early 20s, as well as babies, in fact, they are the most susceptible to meningitis. And the problem with universities is you've got people who are maybe away from home for the first time. They're socializing a lot. They're out a lot. And they might also be living in quite cramped conditions, either in halls of residence or in student flats. And that's when we see the spread of the infection. So you can get vaccinated for meningitis at various stages of your life. Now, babies are offered a variety of vaccines when they're very little, the first few weeks of life, right up until they were 1 or 2 years old. And then teenagers at school are also offered a vaccine against meningitis. But meningitis B, which is the one that accounts for about 80% of infections, that has only been offered to children, to babies, in the last decade. So today's teenagers won't be vaccinated against meningitis B. The easiest way to check whether you've been vaccinated against meningitis is to check your medical records. You can either do that online on the NHS app, or you can look at a thing called the Red Book, which your parents would have been given when you were a kid, and that lists all the vaccinations that you've had. If you look at your medical records and you discover you haven't actually had your meningitis vaccines, you can go and get them from your GP through the NHS. But meningitis B, now that's not currently available on the NHS. You can get it, though, if you go to private providers like high street providers or other providers of vaccines. So if you're at risk of coming down with meningitis, for example, you've been a close contact of someone who's currently ill with it, you might well be given antibiotics to ward off the infection. But if you do come down with it, then there are a number of treatments they can give you. That might include, for example, fluids. It might include an oxygen mask if you're very, very ill. But the key thing is to get help quickly, to seek medical attention, because it is an infection that can develop very, very quickly.
Meanwhile, President Trump has pressured countries over the Strait of Hormuz.
A very bad future if allies do not help secure the Strait of Hormuz, complaining that some were not that enthusiastic about getting involved. Keir Starmer says he and his allies are working on a plan to secure the vital waterway, but insists the UK will not be drawn into a wider war over Iran. The Israeli military says it's begun a wide-scale wave of strikes in parts of Iran and has detailed plans for at least 3 more weeks of war. Iran continues with retaliatory strikes across the region. The UAE's biggest port and oil storage facility, Fujairah, has been hit, and a drone sparked a fuel tank fire near Dubai Airport. Several explosions were heard also across Doha. After fresh strikes on Beirut, the IDF said it's begun limited and targeted ground operations, in its words, against Iranian-backed Hezbollah in southern Lebanon. Well, President Trump has criticized his allies for their reluctance to help break the Iranian blockade of the Strait of Hormuz, saying countries protected by American troops did not want to get involved. He added that the U.S. military campaign against Iran has continued in full force in recent days. Take a listen.
Numerous countries have told me they're on the way. Some are very enthusiastic about it, and some aren't. Some are countries that we've helped for many, many years. We've protected them from horrible outside sources, and they weren't that enthusiastic. And the level of enthusiasm matters to me.
Our North America editor, Sarah Smith, was listening to the president and has more from Washington.
Of all the countries that Donald Trump has asked for assistance, he seems particularly irritated with the UK and with Keir Starmer. He is still annoyed that there was a delay, albeit only 24 hours, in the US being allowed to use British air bases. He's still frustrated that he says that the offer of naval ships was too late after he claims America had already won the war in Iran. And of the help that he's asking for now, he says the UK might help maybe, but they should help enthusiastically, and said clearly the level of enthusiasm matters to him, because this isn't just a case of the military assistance that he needs. He is openly admitting that he sees this as a test of loyalty for allies, saying that America doesn't need the help, he claims, because it's the strongest country in the world, as he always says, but he wants to see what allies will do when they are asked, because of the long suspicion he's always had that allies who rely on America in some circumstances wouldn't necessarily come to the aid of the US when they were required. So it's a particularly difficult time, I think, with the mood the president's in, to be trying to stand up against him.
Earlier today, Germany and Britain ruled out any NATO involvement in attempts to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. But the British Prime Minister said London was working with individual allies on a plan to secure the vital waterway. Keir Starmer also insisted the UK would not be drawn into what he described as a wider war.
We are working with others to come up with a credible plan for the Straits of Hormuz to ensure that we can reopen shipping and passage through the strait. Let me be clear, that won't be, and it's never been envisaged to be, a NATO mission.
Ben Chu from BBC Verify has been looking at what role the Royal Navy could play in any operation, and also the risks involved.
Here is one of the potential threats to shipping in that vital waterway, Iranian mines. The Iranian military inventory includes the Sadaf O2C mine, designed to sit just below the waterline and detonate after contact with a passing ship. Reports suggest the Iranian regime, in response to the US and Israeli strikes since the 28th of February, has deployed some mines in the Hormuz Strait already, although we haven't been able to independently verify this. The UK has 8 ships able to sweep for mines. Here's an example of a Royal Navy Sandown-class minesweeper vessel, the HMS Bangor. China and the US also have a number of counter-mine vessels. However, it's important to bear in mind that the threat from Iran to commercial shipping is not just from mines. It's also from small, fast boats and also drones. The US has suggested the US Navy could provide an escort for tankers passing through the strait to guard against these kind of potential attacks. Now, the UK Type 45 naval destroyer like HMS Defender do have the capability to defend against drones, yet there are obvious dangers for UK ships of getting involved in any potential escort operations, as they could become targets themselves.
Iran has mounted more retaliatory strikes across the region. Qatar says it's intercepted a second wave of missiles from Iran following an early attack, and targets have also been hit in the UAE. Well, our correspondent Azadeh Mashiri is in Dubai. Azadeh, lots of people on socials asking about Dubai Airport. Tell us more about those attacks that have taken place today across the Gulf.
Yes, so Gulf countries are still being pulled into this war because of their ties with the United States. Whether it's the UAE here, Saudi Arabia or Qatar, they've all talked about intercepting attacks from Iran, Iraq, Kuwait. These countries have also reported attacks. Now, it's not the first time that Iran has targeted countries in this region, but it's the scale that's different, which is why we've heard officials say they're surprised by what they're witnessing. Now, perhaps that's Iran trying to pressure these countries to urge the United States to end the war. Unclear if that's working. What is clear is that leaders here are furious, particularly here in the UAE, where they have played a mediating role. Oman, of course, has played a major one over the years. Here in the United Arab Emirates, they're worried about whether there will be long-term impacts to their image, to their economy. Here in Dubai, it's a city of expats. To see Dubai International Airport with a fire breaking out from a drone-related incident earlier today, to see another major oil terminal in the eastern part of the country in Fujairah see a fire break out, to have a missile drop on top of a car and kill a civilian, a Palestinian civilian. These are incidents that are major blows to the image of safety and security that the UAE has built in this volatile region. And when you think of Dubai, you think of the beautiful, glamorous glass towers behind me. You think of tourism, and you do, above all, think of safety. So people here are very worried.
In other news, Iran is reportedly said to only letting friendly ships through the Strait of Hormuz, and others are targeted.
Now, we will be, of course, returning to our panel to talk about Ghulam Reza Soleimani, the commander of Iran's internal security unit, who also has been killed in a strike. It comes as the U.S. is facing growing isolation over its plans to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. Iran effectively blocked the key shipping route after the United States and Israel launched a military offensive, of course, on Iran. A fifth of the world's crude oil and liquefied natural gas normally passes through the shipping channel. President Trump has criticized allies who host U.S. soldiers for failing to support Washington.
We have 45,000 troops in Japan. We have 45,000 troops in South Korea. We have 45,000, 50,000 troops in Germany. We defend all these countries. And then, do you have any minesweepers? And they say, well, would it be possible for us not to get involved? We spend trillions and trillions of dollars on NATO to defend other countries. And I always said, but if it ever comes time to defend us, they're not going to be there.
Well, let's bring in journalist Inzamam Rashid, who is overlooking the Strait of Hormuz. There are reports, Inzamam, of some vessels being allowed to pass through the strait there. What can you tell us? What have you seen as well?
Yes, there are, Richard, some vessels passing through, and they have done over the last 24 hours. Mainly, I have to say, they are Iranian vessels transporting Iranian oil and goods through to China. Of course, China being Iran's largest customer when it comes to oil exports. But we've also seen a vessel from Pakistan, a Pakistan-flagged carrier, has managed to pass through the Strait of Hormuz. A couple from India as well over the last 24 hours. Importantly, on the Pakistan vessel, I was actually speaking to a very senior Pakistani diplomat today, and he told me that the reason that that had happened is because of trust, because of a relationship that Pakistan has with Iran, and it feels that that's the only way Iran is going to allow vessels through, is that if they are essentially allies or if they feel they are friendly countries, not with any form of aggression towards Iran, that seems to be the sentiment here. But over the last 24 hours as well, we have seen Iran carry out an attack on a vessel here in these waters, just a few kilometers south to where I am. There was a vessel off the coast of Fujairah, near to Fujairah port, which was targeted by Iran. So yes, whilst they have seemed to allow some vessels through, and they're vetting every single ship from every country that does come through, they are still targeting ships in these waters, something that they have been doing over the last couple of weeks. The big question now is whether some of these military vessels, like the USS Tripoli that the United States is sending on the way, whether they will actually have any impact here. We know that the International Maritime Authority today have said Yes,
on that very point, this this USS Tripoli, which is an amphibious assault ship, which we had reports of it being sent to the...
With that, we have come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Onkanala Dingi program with Aloise Shimi. And from Indafa Happy Juju, it is goodbye. I'll see you again tomorrow, same time, same place.